talking, if you listen to what I'm saying, I'm repeating myself constantly. I'm always bringing back to the model of the four bodies. And you, you need to say your sentences in light of that structure. When you call the radio station, Rush Limbaugh tells you that you're Republican, blah, blah, blah. You say, no, that's a chemical body, Rush. We've got the astral body, got the TV body, the chip body. He'll say, you sound like a liberal. You sound like complicated intellect. You learned that at Yale, right? No, no, I learned it from Bob. Bob? Who's Bob? Bob Dobbs. You never heard of him, Rush, but he created you, blah, blah, blah. You know that. You hang him up. But at least you entertain him for 35 seconds, okay? Then you come back in and get your buddy to do that. But you always bring it to the structure of our time.
So I'm hearing you to say that meme that you're talking about is multidimensional. We do something.
Yes.
We leave the chemical body in our astral body, go places, return, and do not need to communicate because we do it by ESP.
That's right. Now, the analog media, the TV land Skype is the cloning of ESP. Television and radio was an externalization of the natural sensitivity in humans. Now, chip body disconnects from the cloning of ESP. So the global village is back in the 40s and 50s. Now we get the global theater, then the digital matrix, where you disconnect from the clone ESP and voluntarily re-engage with it when you want to. So the chip body is voluntary ESP. We're past ESP. Now, Shirley MacLaine, in the 70s, when I was with Dave Worster, and he was channeling cosmic awareness, that was pretty fringe behavior, marginalized, like Seth and the Jane Roberts stuff. To think in 15 years that Shirley MacLaine and Rantha would be on CNN or the Phil Donahue show, most people didn't foresee that. The point is the Andromeme started to include the astral legacy. And that's why you have what William Irwin Thompson calls the planetization of the esoteric. So that's just the astral. And that's a big market. And the self-help books, the soul for the chicken or whatever it is, chicken feed for the soul, all that kind of stuff.
He has a question too, Bob, when you're done.
Hey, Robbie, are you coming back?
I'll come back.
Yeah, you can't leave after you've been so involved that. Okay? The ecology of it.
Bob, a good point is when Robbie read the 8-bit.
Anybody who leaves should sort of say why they're leaving and know.
But
you have to
change out my brain.
Yes, it was a good example. I just says, Robbie, you should read. I talked to him about Bob McClune for one night out here for a couple hours, and then I says, oh, here's the 8-bit interview.
Yeah.
And once he read that, he says, shit. He got it.
Well, he thought he got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got it.
He started.
He got the beginning.
He got the beginning. Did you have a question?
Yeah.
Go ahead. What's your name again?
Nate.
That's
good. I want to jump back to what you were talking about, September 11th, and I want to understand more about, how, a structure most people would say is inanimate, and is devoid of any human characteristics at all, is only going to take on the characteristics of being overwhelmed,
right,
and, humiliated, and topple over. I'm just a little fuzzy with, how that literally happened.
Right. And you've heard of the Gaia theory, that the Earth is alive?
No.
Okay, well, that's a meme that's around for 30 years. A lot of people know the Gaia hypothesis. The point is that the mystics, the Buddhists, and that say vegetables and minerals and consciousness is in everything. Okay, that's hard for Westerners to understand because we were fragmented by literacy. But under electric environment, the merging of the cloning of ESP and TV, we begin to see, nature has... Our boundaries of consciousness melt, our boundaries of literate consciousness. So we start saying, well, let's include vegetables and mineral. Okay, well, buildings are made from minerals, from stone. If the earth is alive, then why wouldn't its products be alive? So why wouldn't stone and glass be conscious? If we're going to accept the meme of we're all one and we better be respectful to the insects, and not eat them or whatever it is. That's the beginning of approaching. Then you take television and the CNN and the internet, which is an extension of the intimacy of speech. Do you think words are alive? Just in general, because they're so close to humans, so you're talking to a word and a human. So think of TV replaying that intimacy of the speech plus the eye and the sensitivity of the meme and the general ESP in TV. Now imagine human people looking at the living mineral tower through the living television and the internet, that squaring, the quadrupling, the cubing of this consciousness is going to get something reacting in a bizarre way. And the buildings reacted. They offed themselves. It's almost like a tetrad. You enhance something, it obsolesces something, retrieves something, and then flips into something opposite. So you enhance everything under internet conditions, and then you obsolesce security with 911. You retrieve the age of terror, and it flips into buildings offing themselves. Something so extraordinary.
Or flips into Howard Dean's mic breaking. And
who?
The CL,
Harry Dean?
Howard Dean.
Bro, oh yeah, that's right. Yes, yes. Yeah. That
his mic breaking, you mean yeah. I have a scream?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then he gets ridiculed and
right.
He's not
good.
Android.
That's a good example.
And we don't know where that thought came. Most people say, well, I didn't think he was yelling or this and that.
Right.
There's all this arguing over, well, it didn't happen, but something made that perception happen. That's the Android meme or something inside of us that's making us think we saw that. Now, there may be someone at the Rumpelstiltskin at the White House making people think that by putting the idea out, but it'd be very hard to find that person, and his alibi was, oh, just do my job, and then this is what people thought was happening anyways. See, so we can't determine who's guilty anymore.
So with the Gaia theory about 9/11, would it also be a buildup that came from September 11 being the day that first Bush disclosed his thoughts about the One World Order? Being like a
in 91 or something, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this like the September 11th happened in Brazil at some point.
Happened in Chile at 73.
Chile.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like a reverberation that the earth
yeah.
picks up somewhere.
I have a turn, not the earth consciousness, which is made up of the four bodies by 9/11, by 2001. What I call them is holopathic replays. Holopathic is, you have, the satellite creates the sense we're in a hologram. You don't have to have a little technology called hologram. That's coming. See the movie Wild Palms projects that future by Oliver Stone in 93 in May. It was broadcast for a four-part TV series. Remember that?
Bruce Wagner walks the
yeah.
beach all the time.
Yeah, we
wrote it.
We did the Leary interview that weekend. The hologram is there as an effect before the actual artifact shows up inside the mixed corporate media around inside Para, the satellite for Cindy Merch. Now, think of that as shrinking. Through the 70s, 80s, 90s, through the digitization, miniaturization, and compression that makes everything happen at a smaller level. So the hologram gets tinier and tinier, like homeopathy. It gets more and more invisible. So you put homeopathy together with hologram, and you get holopathic. Holopathic. And the holopathic process is this replay of cliche probes every 200 years, which is 12 months. The whole shebang of what we've done is going to happen to us in media every 12 months in some form, in some culture. There'll be a plane crash somewhere.
On that, do you think it's possible that the Paris of Beer plane, that hologram, beamed fake ET invasion to grab the rest of the rights that are left here?
Well, that's what they like. We organized that. Remember, I went out in 58 to organize the UFO meme in the Mojave Desert, and that's where I met Zappa. The point is, it's 19th century stuff. The real thing that went inside you was radio. 180 years ago, any fantastic apocalyptic scenario that the Hopis or the Catholics or the Mayan calendar or any of these fantastic scenarios of the end of the world already happened with radio. That's why the book is called Finnegan's Wake. Okay? Joyce could see this. All cultures die because we started to move into the electrified landscape. So all our visions and metaphors of what is to come have already happened. Now, think about that for about 2 years. Meditate. Watch how everybody is trying to say something's coming and see where their agenda goes nowhere. There's been 100 agendas on that level the last 30 years. None of them go anywhere, right? Waco's an example. Any of them are. I'm an example, okay? So, look at that process. The replay. It's like the Android meme is replaying all our culture back to ourselves. It's all going to do. So it has, in my charts, it shows the archetypal replays.
Based on that, would you say like McCain is like the next Android meme president?
You know why? Because I say this on an interview on New York TV last week, and you can see it on YouTube, because we're post-tactility. So you got two tactile images fighting out, the female stereotype of tactility, becoming a bureaucrat, Hillary, and then the black image of tactility. They're the very, very tactile culture, but that's tactility's that. Who is the best musician, supposedly? The blacks. So you get two old-fashioned tactile images acting out for the old bureaucratic position of the White House. The cane represents the Pentagon, which is future technologies coming. So he has the advantage because he represents the future. Not the future that people live inside the matrix. The future of actual engineers that I'm part of the new environments. So he has a chance. Now, a lot can happen in the situation. Android may be tricky. I may be president in 6 months, the way things are going. You know? It's a long time away. But that's my reasoning last week. McCain is president right now. Who's ever leading the polls is president. Bush is not discussed anymore. He's long gone, right? Doesn't mean he's not doing whatever he can do within his instrumentality of the White House and organizing his bank accounts. But the actual leader right now is either Hillary Obama or Ron Paul or Mr. McCain. It's Mr. McCain right now. He's leading in the polls, right? Somebody, I think they're evening out is what I heard. I don't take it too seriously, but you want to talk about these local issues, I will, and that's my take on it. But it's nothing to do with us. Okay?
Bob,
don't worry about it.
Talk about poltergeist, because just talking about McLuhan, polls. What does that mean, poltergeist?
It's pollster guys.
Yeah, pollster guys.
McLuhan talked about that the George Orwell Big Brother, this committee that ran the whole planet, was not the actual Big Brother by the 60s. The real Big Brother of the 60s was the Nielsen ratings, based on, since the global actors were the participants in the global theater and the statistical quantification of our consumption patterns was the Nielsen ratings and the control of it, say, this show is more important than that show. That's a fake statistic, but it controlled everything. He said that was a poltergeist. In other words, it possessed us. It's the polls, right? Taking polls, finding out the ratings. But it's a ghost because the electric environment, you can't see it, and it controls the electric environment, the Nielsen ratings do. So his phrase was poltergeist. That's something to throw at Rush Limbaugh or what's Howard Stern or who's the guy here, or Roy of Hollywood, anybody. Throw it at your neighbor. Poltergeist, sir. That's what's that about? And then you explain it to him. Oh, I never heard that before. Then they go and they dream about it. They get creative. Then they start mowing the lawn or something and demanding a new kind of mousetrap or something. You know, and that's what humans do. They get an idea. They think they have to translate into some object. They can't live with the ecstasy of the pattern. Learn to live with the ecstasy of, I actually got a pattern here. I know something about things that are not knowable. It'll melt away within a few weeks. Then you wait for the next one. Best way to do that, call me up.
Is that the
always manufacturing poltergeist patterns for you,
Bob? Is that the epiphany Joyce says that you can find enlightenment? And how about this? Because you talk about blacks being the best musicians. Bob Dylan said, and we're going to show 4 hours of Bob Dylan here in a couple months, a suppressed Bob Dylan film.
What is it?
He won't allow to be released.
What's it called?
Rinaldo and Clara.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah, and it's got Howard Stern's Larry Sloatman in it.
Yeah,
Joni Mitchell. Rambling
Have
Jack,
you seen it?
Allen Ginsberg, yes.
Yeah.
And so he said, how does it feel? A question. James Brown said, I feel good. He made a statement. So can you talk about that?
Well,
white versus the black.
Why did the phrase blowing in the wind become so charismatic? Because the wind referred to the electric effect, the discarnate state, the electric wind. In other words, electricity is an extension of first nature in our central nervous system, and it's a psychic meme that we're communicating. You could call it a wind. The ripples of public feeling and sensitivity, which are imploded once you have television. So the answers are blowing in the wind. Dylan, remember he said last year in the Scorsese document, no, it was in 60 Minutes a couple years ago, he said, I don't know who I was back then. I don't know where that stuff came from. Did you guys see
right,
that?
Right.
You know, he was just channeling it for some reason. He had the genius to be the lightning rod, but what he said, he doesn't even understand. You know what I mean? But I could tell him what he meant. And blowing in the wind was really communicating the effect of the satellite. The satellite went around the planet, was an extension of the planet, turned the planet into an art form, made it a divine archetype. So we're going to think of our new technological virtual reality that starts in the 60s in nature terms. So the baby boomers responded to blowing in the wind, which meant it's blowing in the electric effect. No one's ever said that to you before. So why did, so then I saw I'm Not There going over London on the plane a couple weeks ago or a month ago. That's all about me. It's called I'm Not There. Bob Dylan did a press conference in 1965 here in L.A., and they asked him, I thought that he was a protest singer, and then he became a surrealistic Rimbo replay, and they thought he was indifferent to social issues, and they thought he didn't care anymore about people. So one guy says, well, what do you really care about? And he thinks for a second, he says, well, everybody disappeared. Now that's really important, because everybody was disappearing in terms of communication. So, he says that 40 years ago, and 42 years later, out comes the movie, I'm not there. There's this issue. I don't know if Todd Haynes realizes this. There's this issue. Everybody's disappeared. I've disappeared. I'm not there. You look at the trailer, it says, this is about Bob Dylan. This is about everyone. This is about no one. It's so McClellan-esque, that movie. I recommend it. I'm not there. But the point is, it's reflecting Dylan's concern 40 years ago of, well, I'd get upset if everybody disappeared. But there's an example of him actually talking about what McClellan was saying as an artist, as a figure, as a creative person. Didn't understand the scientific causes, but was intuiting what was going on, saying the right resonant, transient words and phrases. Because McClellan was saying that for 10 years, that everybody had disappeared. That meant the chemical body disappeared into the discarnate super angel state. Am I getting through to you people? You will atone! You have meddled with the force of the nature. That's a great speech, right?
Come on, Don. You must have a point. Nothing?
Okay. Are you saying we don't have to be here?
Right.
Your language doesn't have to be here. So fuck with it and become a robot of slogans and say my stuff back to the language which has been electrified. Okay? You are still here. Our bodies are here. Your soul's going on, reincarnate, do its thing, and have relationships with your daughter and, you know, 300 permutations, wife, mother, doctor, son, you know. I mean, this is the way we do it. We have our little circles we reincarnate with. I've been with my wife, I don't know, I think it's like 500 times, and we actually took on a foster daughter. I asked her evergreens, how long have I known her? 470 fucking times. She showed up again, you know. It'd be interesting if we could start checking that out when we aren't afraid of dying. When we die consciously, we say, okay, I'll go here and work with my karma. I've fucking done you 500 times. I'm going over to Jerry's stupid fucking circle. Or your circle. I'm going to start messing with other circles. Then it would get real anarchistic in the astral plane. We must permeate all levels with this revolution. We got to fuck with the death cards. Yeah, that's right. And Brian, Norman Mailer was an advocate of this.
Brian, you don't have a question? Or Michael? Anybody? Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, Michael Shields, a long time student to me. But he insists on emphasizing Tim Leary. Go ahead.
Wonderful stuff about Hubbard and Captain Tripp.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the Seattle.
Yeah, it's a whole thing you'll be very interested in.
Wonderful. Where is that going to be published?
It may be in Paranoia. If not, they'll put it on the website. If they screw up because they're scared, I think Joan's a little puzzled by it in her emails to me. She's not sure if it's relevant to people or her audience. So it will be posted eventually. You'll hear the interview.
Great. Well, you could be president 6 months from now. Any of us could be.
Yes.
If we wanted to do it, we have all the seats in Congress, 440, one-third of the Senate and the president. And we know from Facebook and MySpace and Google that it's technically possible now to use the ballot and write in ballots to do that overnight almost. So it's just a matter of does anybody want to do it?
Yeah, but most people haven't got the guts to do it. They don't understand the process. I'm the only one who has the guts, who could survive the assassination attempts, understand who would be killing me, and all that shit. Obama, you know, they all worry about him getting assassinated if he wins because he doesn't understand the structure. People intuit that.
Well, I like to see it, you know, somebody start a website like Google to create a lottery. Anybody that participated would be in the lottery to draw to be in the positions of Congress.
Have you heard of Nassar?
So if you vote, you'll be in the pool and have a chance to do it.
All those who vote are a member of my nation. Anybody who voted for me is a member of my culture. Everybody else loses their jobs. These people get the Nassar funds. You guys know about the Nassar myth? The releasing of funds? You do, right? You know, in 2000, the farmers or somebody, they got legislation, they went to court, and it got passed, and everybody's owned, like a lot of Americans are owed about $1 trillion. This is a rough approximation. And then it was forced, Clinton stopped it, but then they decided to release it on September 11th at 10 o'clock in 2001, and the Nassar funds were going to be released. An hour before, dirty gang, you know, they interrupted the process. And the Nassar funds haven't been released, and they're still there. Go to the website and read it, but they're waiting for it to be released, all this money. But it's a metaphor of the wealth that's coming in 2012, which has arrived now thanks to me and my team. Okay? So yes, Michael, we will, and metaphorically, anybody who votes for me becomes immediately employed in slack jobs, and everybody else is fired, and any civil war that attempted, we will stop it, because we got the military, right? We're just going to reverse the same structure, all as an art form. Oh, it's a performance piece.
We could, form, the political manifesto from your talk tonight.
Right.
I agree. The story of what we want, where I don't think people realize the reason you become a congressperson is to give all the money to your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legally.
Little Rumpelstiltskin hijacking local states. Right, Michael? Little Rumpelstiltskin hijacking local states, local communities. That's what the Congress of Rumpelstiltskin.
They've been calling it earmarks.
Yeah.
And it turns out earmarks are legal, and all you do is ask your congressman to just give you whatever money you need every year.
Interesting the phrase earmark. I don't know the etymology, but it probably resonates the fact that we're in the content of media is an oral culture. It's not visual marks, it's ear acoustic marks. It's who you can talk to.
Right,
who will answer your phone call?
Right, it's the cronyism is all done on the
within telephone. On the telephone, exactly. Earmarks.
Or tag like farm animals. Earmarks.
Yes, yeah. Mark of the Beast.
Tracy, don't you have a question or comment? Nothing?
How do we get Cindy
to win? Well, she doesn't know anything. You don't want anybody ever heard of to be president. They don't know anything, literally. You know, on one of my other personalities on another radio show, I went on in January. By February, the person was pleading for me to be advisor to Ron Paul because they supported the Ron Paul world. And I offered all kinds of advice on the show about what Ron Paul should do. But come February 5th, he conked out and he couldn't do it. Now he's claiming he's back. But I'm there to help Ron Paul. I told Ron Paul to declare himself, that since it was all constitutionally illegal based on literate constitution of 250 years ago, he should allow to declare himself president right now. I told him all that. Didn't go anywhere. So I can help these people, but they ain't helpable. They don't understand the issues. I understand the issues since I created half of them. The other half, my wife. Okay. No, it's a very complex. If you understood how imploded the world is today, you can understand that what I'm saying could happen. I've been talking about this since 1987 on the radio. Yeah, well, that's the problem, right? It's a big world, big media, four bodies, four landscapes. Do you know that when we make the ET contact, which will happen in the 2020s with the Boodians, at that point, when we die, we will be able to talk to the souls of the Boodians from the Boodies constellation. But up to this point, the astral plane, your soul's not allowed to interact with them, or doesn't interact because we don't know them. There's an interesting, profound insight you never heard of. It's a vast world on the astral plane. Now, we're simulated that with our electric media. So no wonder we haven't heard of anybody or anything of consequence. Because why? Because cultures communicate their own memes to themselves in their local media. Those are archetypes. You can't stop. McLuhan discovered in 1953 the meme code. Same year, Crick and Watson discovered the DNA chemical body code, the gene code. Two discoveries made that year. You've only heard of Crick and Watson, the DNA code. McLuhan, through Joyce and Lewis, cracked the meme code. Same year.
1953?
1953. That's when he formed the Explorations magazine.
What is the meme code?
The fact that we create cultural habits. Just like genes pass on physiological, biological habits or traits, repeated through parents supposedly, right? Well, cultures pass on meme ideas and usually things that are effects of the artifacts they have in their local culture.
Like a collective consciousness.
That's a primitive Jungian situation. But see, that's a mystical ethereal term. It actually relates to the media that the culture uses. What are the Chinese known for? They're built on rice for thousands of years, right? What are the Slavs? What are the Russians? What did they do? They're vodka or something, right? The thing is that cultures have habits. And those are passed on in the, quote, minds of people and the media they use. That is a determinism like genes. We need to see through that one as well as the genetic code. And McLuhan discovered the meme code.
Wasn't that Dawkins' premise in the selfish gene, both the two worlds, the memes and the genes, running parallel to each other?
He coined the word.
Genes and memes are not ways of passing on humans and cultures, but that we and cultures are ways of passing on memes and genes.
Right. There's a chicken and egg question
right,
there.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, you know the answer to that. The chicken is the eggs means for getting more eggs.
Right, exactly.
You know, there's that answer. But yeah, we can't figure out, and those are Western questions about, well, here's a beginning and here's that, and what's the cause and what's the effect. You can't resolve that.
Well, and where if there's any kind of resolution at all, is Persig's unasking the question. You go back to the very nature of questioning to begin with, and realize that language is just a way of framing something for immediate convenience,
and it no longer meets that convenience, you have to reshape it entirely. But the language becomes its own sort of...
Right. You say the convenience, new technologies come in and upset the convenience of the use of the language, and then language has to adopt. You said a very interesting thing just before that. That think of the language not as a concept, but as material media.
It's a biological expression, like Chomsky said. It's something that the brain, humans produce language like
urine, like feces in urine.
Like feces, or conversely, like the way horses run really fast and are really beautiful when they run, and like mosquitoes suck blood. That language is just this thing that we do. It's the thing that makes us the most human. Not even the fire thing.
That's right. Okay. So the word mean was invented in 76 in the book called The Selfish Gene by Dawkins. He conceptualized this, he made a word, mean.
Yeah.
He fit it back into literate and verbal media. But he does not talk about how media, the environments they create that McLuhan talks about, is the mean generation. So they conceptualize it, these left hemisphere physicists, and make you miss the ground that we don't need a new concept, we just have to know that's what McLuhan meant, and that Joyce expressed it, and Wyndham Lewis developed it. There's this history. And it goes back to another American, Edgar Allan Poe. He was the first to realize and write poetry with the effects preceding the causes. And then the symbolists, the French symbolists picked it up. Then Joyce and the Vorticists did. And then McLuhan saw what they meant. He applied the Vorticists' insights in 53. So this is important knowledge if you want to know something. And so, you don't have to know anything. You're here to figure out who the hell you're going to interact with next and having a meaningful soul-to-soul experience. I mean, on the astral plane where you have all your lives happening at the same time, you don't have any interpersonal connection really. You're resonating with everything.
That's that line from the guy who was going on about the remote viewing. He says, you're not going anywhere, you're already there. You're not remote viewing anything. That's part of the releasing into the remote view, which is, it just throws everything, including language and the astral plane thing. The idea that there's a separate astral plane.
Right.
Again, you're almost back to the same problem with cause and effect, chicken and the egg, astral and not astral, chemical and not chemical. Where does astral end and chemical begin?
That's right. Now take that. That's valid up to you take it. He says we're not going anywhere. That has been simulated by the radio. I'm going to China, but my chemical body didn't go anywhere. It's when I listened to a broadcast from China. I'm there, they're here, and if the CIA is monitoring all, we're all in the CIA's offices. Okay? So that's what we're simulating, the most interesting humanist profundities, or whatever wisdom other cultures had before.
And it even works itself into the concrete, because I have a bunch of friends of mine who are a bunch of lunatic foodies. And LA is now, by the way, the largest multi-ethnic environment on the planet. There are more languages spoken in the LA Unified School District than anywhere else in the world. This is not only the second biggest city for many countries, all those people outside their country, it's the second biggest Mexican city in the world, and there are now two islands of people, Samoans and I think Tongans, but there's more of them here than there are in their original homeland. So LA is literally this new world, and it's now, while you were expanding earlier on the idea that we've transcended through the city of the angels into this other world, it has reemerged in the physical geography. The world is here. This is the largest Buddhist temple in the Western Hemisphere. It's in Hacienda Heights, only rivaled, I think, by the Tibetan one in Berkeley now, but still it's the largest function, or it's a function of that community. In a huge way, the Tibetan thing is as much our desire to be Tibet. But here, this Buddhist temple is a function of the Chinese Buddhists that are here. It's not a bunch of people who wandered into the Bodhi tree and said, fuck, let's build a Buddhist temple. It's the Chinese bringing that aspect of China here.
So LA was the engender, as Lewis said, of the super angel structure. So you have the peasants gathering around the new Mecca.
Yeah.
Since Los Angeles built this, the whole world comes here to snuggle up to what they think is the source of it.
Yeah.
It came from us in our history. It came from the whole world. It didn't come from L.A., but L.A. is a symbol of it, the figure. Now, the other point is that what you just described is what Wyndham Lewis predicted in 1948 in his book, America and Cosmic Man. He went back to Europe after being exiled in Canada during World War II, And he went back there and said, you Europeans don't understand what's being grown in the United States. You guys are too provincial. You're too little small city spaces. But the global culture is coming out of the United States, and especially Los Angeles. He wrote that 60 years ago. As an Angeleno, look into your roots.
And
William Lewis.
Interestingly, I'm originally from New York, but everybody's originally from somewhere else anyway, right? Interesting thing, too, about the English, some people don't know, and it spreads around, whether it's true or not, it's centric here, that Los Angeles, I've heard this, and this I find this hard to believe, in spite of Canada and Australia, that the largest concentration of English nationals outside of England is in Los Angeles. And a lot of it related to the movie industry and Hollywood English movies, you know, Jekyll and Hyde being filmed at...
And that started in the 80s. That's due to British intelligence. When the Rockefellers gave up North America, as Dr. Peter spelled out, and went to China, the European around the Rothschild dynasty took over New York and L.A. That's why the British dominate all the media. What's her name? Puck. Vanity Fair.
Tina
Brown comes over in 84. What's her husband? Head editor of the London Sunday Telegraph, the London Times. That's a major intelligence operation in terms of old newspaper bullshit, right?
Yeah.
But that's the Tina Brown represents the precursor to Lady Di and Prince Charles, representing the oligarchy, who were the only ones that had any money in the 80s after Rockefellers blew their wad in the late 70s.
What about the 5,000 British agents that were in Rockefeller Center to soften up the United States for World War II for the American entry?
Well, that was the British Empire, right? That's room 3606, I think it's named, you know, William Stevenson. Okay, so Britain technically loses the war if the Americans had to come in. The Americans come in under the auspices of MI6, MI5, and European intelligence. They've always run the show. What's the myth of the skull and bones? It comes out of Germany in the 1830s, right? So it's the Anglo-American establishment. It moved geographically the chemical bodies from London in 1945 to New York. But it already was happening through, say, since the Species Act of 1879 here in the United States.
And who is the mythic starter of Skull and Bones at Yale? It was the guy who was the greatest openly opium dealer in the world. And what do we know about the British Empire? It picks up the whole drug dealing thing. I'm convinced...
Let me tell you a secret. This has not been out. Guess who runs the whole show? Who does? The Chinese. We don't realize. When Marco Polo went to the most advanced culture in 1200, 1300, he brought products back. Well, did they just give them and sell them for a few bucks? No, there were deals made. And then the Columbus tried to get over to China. You had to go to headquarters China. China has bankrolled the West for 800 years. Saint Germain used Chinese money with the Ottoman Empire as a buffer. Saint Germain used that money to set up the American Revolution. We've been in debt to the Chinese for 800 years, if you want to know a secret of world history.
And it's funny you mentioned, because...
See the blind spot. Just hold on. Yeah. The blind spot. We think the Chinese are backward place. William Thompson talks about how they retreated.
It's never been backward.
Look how they set up the Ottoman Empire after the fall of Constantinople as a buffer between them. We're talking on the financial medium of gold, money, and credit, which is an invisible environment. It becomes popularized with the printing press, and people start to have mercantilism and capitalism and bourgeoisie, but the strings of it go back to the original wealthy culture. Very interesting to know this. Now that we've come full circle, who's running the show? China, right? But it's just the layers of the onion peeling away, and they already were there. On the financial level, which is not a powerful environment anymore.
Speaking of full circle, the whole image of the 2012 Mayan calendar, what do we know about the proto-culture that started Central and South America was the Olmecs. And what do we know about the Olmecs? There have been recent attempts on the part of real scholars to say, guys, the Olmecs were Shang Dynasty Chinese. That there's a scholar out of University of Texas there was a scholar from China. Shang Dynasty is the earliest or the second earliest dynasty. The ideograms are very distinct and they're very archaic and very hard to understand. There's only a few scholars, a legitimate form of study. Guys wandering out of University of Texas, which has a great department of Central and South American megalithic cultural studies, and he sees these spearheads. He says, what are you guys doing with Shang Dynasty spearheads? So they're not there. They're Celtas. They're spearheads from the Olmec culture.
And that came from the Lemurians. For 18,000 B.C., the Atlanteans are 10,000 to 14,000 B.C. So the West has always been a little behind the Chinese Lemurians.
Let me just point out that the Olmecs didn't call themselves Olmecs.
I would imagine, sure. Yeah, I can imagine.
They called themselves the Xi.
Xi, yeah.
Xi.
And it coincides with the fall of the Shang Dynasty, the migration. But the correlation, regardless of the theories that emerge from them, you focus on the original evidence.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody wants to...
You know why they want no one to talk about it? Because that's chemical body history. It's irrelevant. We're dealing with the chip body thing. And that's why the old specialist archaeologists and the conservative politicians, they stick with the party line because it's obsolete knowledge.
Why America is the great experiment in controlled knowledge.
Yeah.
Although there were... I do honor and respect that there were honest... real psycho-spiritual good people, or as I'm a new book that I'm reading, The Invisible College, tried to emerge and do good, like Ben Franklin and those guys.
The Cincinnati Society. Cincinnati Society.
Like that America was originally set up as a negative experiment in a form of mind control. The first form of mind control is history. It begins with the Catholics, with the creation of...
Begins with the phonetic, bringing the meat, brings with the phonetic alphabet, the Greeks, and then the Hebrews.
Right.
That culture solidifies in Rome. Egypt cuts off the papyrus in 560 or so. Rome collapses.
Who they picked it up from? They picked it up from the Egyptians. They ran with the Egyptians.
No, the Egyptians... Well, the Egyptians had the beginning effect of writing, and they went monotheistic a little bit, right?
Yeah.
They couldn't hold it together because it wasn't the phonetic alphabet. The Greeks solidified with the phonetic alphabet. So then the printing press retrieves the phonetic alphabet, and that's where it came from, if you're saying Catholic. That's manuscript culture becoming dispersed with the printing press.
But the Catholics also managed to keep the empire together just with these artificial scriptorums. If you read The Vicars of Christ by Peter DeRosa, there were holes. The whole scriptorum system was set up towards documents legitimizing the Roman Catholic Church's attempt to hold it to create itself, to self-create.
Yep.
He sort of is afraid to go the full distance and says that, well, they were basing it on these original Jesus and Peter and these good guys, rather than just calling a spade and saying that the entire thing was fake from the beginning. And I think the British, who were a breakaway empire, I think the world has been a war between these two empires, the Roman Empire and the British Empire. If you listen to LaRouche, he badmouths the Brits. I would almost say he's an agent of the Vatican. You listen to people badmouth the Vatican and the agents of the Brits. Doesn't matter since we're all going to die anyway.
No, we're not going to die. We did die.
Well, Robert Anton Wilson.
The chemical body. Now, there's a lazy thinker. God bless him. Is Robert Anton Wilson.
That's right. And it's the right of the ape who lays around and just knows that his sheer existence is based on bugs and twigs, and the rest is just going to happen anyway, which a good guru will tell you. But the fact of the matter is, Robert Anton Wilson said something bizarrely backwards. I don't know if he meant to, and whether he did or he didn't, I'm going to take it that way. They said to Robert Anton Wilson, how is it that you can espouse the conspiracy stuff that seems so real and so true, but you kind of giggle at it? He said something interesting. He said, no conspiracy lasts longer than 10 years. It's got to be patently untrue. Some of them last thousands of years. Conspirators crook. Every one of them is going to die. Cheney, artificial heart, lizard body, whatever the fuck he is, he's going away. And no matter how many times you can reincarnate on this particular level, it's all, like the Tibetans say, like the Mystics say, it's all going to come back to the center. It's all going to come back to that great divine Taoist Tai Chi symbol where the evil and the good exist in the same one. But in the meantime, we get to sit around like this and fuck around and giggle and talk.
Wait a minute. So the conspiracy is not any committee for 10 years. It's the medium of print and the record of accounting that was set up 500 years ago.
Yeah,
so that you can't be Mr. Rockefeller because you are Don, okay? As long as you accept the alphabetic determinist principles, you're limited. And that when you move beyond the chemical situation, now you are a bookstore guy, you're citing books, it's an ancient medium. It's okay, you do that as a cliche pro, but you're interrupting the process of revolution here by bringing up your favorite books. Don't do that when we take over the White House. Do not mention the print medium, okay?
So by that time, it'll be up here.
That's good.
Because
our first...
That's for secret society meetings. That's history argument.
Right, because, you know, our first mess event, we were talking about this earlier, Media Ecology Super Sessions, was 1997 at Midnight Special Bookstore. And it was a woman who went to the Bahamas with Marshall and Bucky, Mary Jane Schultz, and on the description of the event it says, Mary Jane Schultz will say how literacy is obsolete. And so we posted in the window of a bookstore, and people started calling up Margie, the owner, going, what do you mean reading's obsolete? You're a fucking bookstore! They were complaining before. And then that we found out just recently through Mary Jane that the first mess happened in 1970 in the Bahamas, and they called it the McLuhan
Emergency
Strategy Seminar.
Jerry sees that yesterday. He goes, Bob, how could that be? How could that be, Bob? He generally was puzzled. I said, welcome, Jerry. Now you recognize his inoperative situation. I've been living in for 50 years. Now here's why. So I laid out a bunch of examples. But he really was disturbed by it, because finally what I'm talking about hit him personally. His own MESSIKE acronym had shown up in the McLuhan world back in 1970. And he says, how could that be?
Funny you should mention synchronicity. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, that's a joke.
And no, someone did recognize that Chinese thing. Frank goes, it sounds like Chinese to me in one of his songs.
And what? Say that again.
Frank mentioned a song sounding Chinese. You know,
well, it's on Lumpy Gravy. Yeah. It's
so he did.
I'm a Chinese or something. But here's the thing. I'll just show you the sensitivity of me, why I should be president. I had a great idea to respond to your synchronicity. I started to say it, and Jerry was talking. I said, okay, fuck them. They're not going to hear it. Let me be polite and let Jerry speak. So Jerry brings up this ridiculous Zappa gravy, and you guys ain't getting it. But to see if you're polite. If I was arrogant, I would have drowned about and yelled a new amazing idea at you. So you see, am I spiritually blessed for being polite, or should you have heard the idea? Another chicken and egg question.
We'll hear it anyway.
Yeah, you'll hear it eventually.
And anybody else who hasn't asked or
that
anything,
guy right there.
Alan or
Alan, yeah. Anyone say
go ahead. Go
hey,
ahead.
Alan,
go
I was looking at a video of you driving me around 10 years ago. I get it on.
What's your name?
John.
Okay.
I just want to know what are the evergreens?
In August 1974, a man fell asleep in a psychic study group in the office. Another guy comes in and starts talking on the phone to his girlfriend. All of a sudden, the sleeping man starts mumbling things that relate to the conversation that he couldn't have heard from the other end, right? The guy looks and wonders and carries on. The person sleeping keeps interrupting the conversation. So he goes, the guy on the phone goes and gets his buddy. He says, come on, listen to this. And they start looking at this guy, talking. And they eventually say, well, what's talking here? Is this Michael? No. And so whatever was in his head talked to them. And they realized, since they were kind of interested in psychic, that he was channeling something. They then said goodbye to them. They woke this guy up, Michael Blake Reed, and told him what happened. He refused to believe it, that he was talking asleep and channeling something. So they set up, the governor agreed to fall asleep. They had learned from the evergreens in that first session how to put him back in trance again. So a few days later, they put him back in trance and tape recorded it. He woke up the second session, listened to it, realized he was doing it, left that group and started channeling the evergreens. That's August 74. So he's done 11,000 sessions. He did three sessions, each an hour long, for three or four times a week. And when he went in trance, it was so strong that he had to be out an hour because his body processes were almost dead to allow the 6,500 to 7,000 entities to come inside him. So you talk to them for an hour, then they leave, and they leave very ecologically, very simply. They have a ritual to get them to leave. So he did this for 30 years, not clients in 19 countries, including governments and institutions. Often you go to a place in Toronto, a hotel, if you had an appointment like I'd often have, you'd wait and Michael Blake Reed would come down with the previous client down the elevator, then walk him out to the door, then say goodbye, then come and greet me and take me up for my session. Several times I saw ministers of the Canadian government walking out with him. Okay, that's who the Evergreens are. They stopped in October 2004, but you can call 604-536-7402 and get their fantastic catalog.
Is that like the
Arantia
book?
Rantha?
The Arantia book.
Oh, well, it's not a book. It's transcripts of thousands of tapes. The thing is that with the Evergreens, I could ask, what's going on with Rantha? What was the Arantia book? They were the medium's medium. They would tell me who was doing what. And I was involved with Secret Council 10, and I need to know that stuff to beat Prince Charles, turn in taxes, and Mr. Romanov, who ran Asia, no relation to the Russian Romanov dynasty, same name. So it was that advantage of using a viable medium that Prince Charles was arrogant enough to ignore, and he lost, also ended by 92, that medium I recommend to people. There's a new one called the Willows, but that's another story.
Good question, but most of the people would ask the Evergreens, like, can I talk to my dead uncle or something?
Yeah, Michael was bored shitless because he...
Frank would go, who killed Kennedy?
You said Frank. You mean me.
Yeah.
I said, did I really kill Kennedy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob, you did. Okay.
All right, here's another one.
Just
what's your name again?
My name's Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Can all the media talk about
economic collapse, could that actually cause an economic collapse?
Yeah. And it did cause it. And we had to fix it. I mean, we haven't fixed it for Americans. You guys are fucked, okay? You deserve it. You're post-industrial. You can't relate. China is the real owner now. And so China, Russia, and us and our team have organized a new economy for the rest of the world. You know, the United States, the Federal Reserve, cannot use SWIFT anymore. SWIFTF, you know, the electronic transfer, that has been cut off. The United States cannot get money to other parts of the world. That's why the subprime crisis started 2 years ago.
What's going to happen?
Trouble for America. There may be a civil war, there may be this and that, but be cool and all of this shit, and watch the new surfacing.
So the power is shifting to other
The invisible world of financial funding has shifted to another group. That's a whole technical intelligence level. It's print and money is such an obsolete medium. The people own money since the 30s. It was money was private property up to 1929. After that, money is an obsolete medium because the new currency was information electric media. That's the real money. Just keep the conversation going. People are involved. But money itself became public property, known as the welfare state, fascism, socialism, communism. Money, you're guaranteed a basic ticket. You know what I mean? Then the Android meme evaporated even that in the 70s, and that's why neocons came in and said, hey, we're going to budget cut even your right to have your own money. And that's what we've been struggling with ever since. So all you do is get little chemical body, cheap temporary jobs. But that's okay because you got your Walkman on and your TV body, your chip body having a good time. So you put in a little part-time work, starve, but if you're smart, eat the right supplements so you don't live on the burgers and the crap that you need for your chemical body on the food level. Don't take the bad stuff. Take the good stuff. And you can operate on very little low-budget stuff and enjoy the other body.